The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now it's time to think and discern. This is Bob Burney Live.
And welcome to the 5 o'clock hour of Bob Burney Live. I think if you went back 100 years, went out on the street and asked the common American on the street, did America have a Christian foundation? I think the overwhelming majority would reply in the affirmative. Well, of course. But if you go out on the street today and say, did America have a Christian foundation? Probably the majority would either have a long pause and then answer, well, I'm not sure. Or many would say, well, of course not. This is a secular nation. It has become a raging controversy. And I have been really excited about the interview with my guest, Mark David Hall. He is with George Fox University. He's been there since 2001. And he is the author of a brand new book, Did America Have a Christian Founding? Mark David Hall, welcome to Bob Burney Live. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Bob.
It is my pleasure. Give me a little bit about the genesis of this book. I've written one book, and it was an enormous amount of work. And I'm always fascinated by what was the genesis of this book? Something had to place the seed thought in your mind in order to tackle a book of this size and of this magnitude.
Sure. Really, this book follows a dozen academic books that I've either written or edited, mostly on the intersection of faith and politics in the American founding or religious liberty or church-state relations. And I have written and published a bunch of these books with Oxford and Cambridge University presses, and they would sell, you know, 500 or 600 copies and, you know, maybe make some sort of impact. But my wife kept asking me, when are you going to write a book for the general reading public? And so this is my attempt to do it. This is my first book aimed at the general reading public. It's published by Nelson Books. And I'm attempting to bring 25 years of arguments that I've been making at an academic level to the general reading public, especially on this question, did America have a Christian founding?
Was I correct in what I said at the beginning, that if we were to go back 100 years and just went down the street and asked people if America had a Christian foundation, that the overwhelming majority 100 years ago would have answered in the affirmative? Am I off on that?
No, I think that's absolutely right. You have a few progressives and a few academic professors at that time who are starting to question that and to even challenge the Constitution itself for the first time. But your average American would absolutely say, yes, of course we did. It's obvious. It's in our founding documents. Our nation's premised upon Christian ideas, and it really, I think you'd have very little debate 100 years ago.
All right, fast forward to today. I don't know the statistics, and maybe you do, but I would imagine that the majority of Americans today, when asked the same question, would answer in the negative, that no, America is a secular government because of the wall of separation of church and state, and no, we did not have a Christian foundation. Am I right in that?
You know, I think you are. Certainly what I've looked into is I've read through a lot of high school text, history text, and college history text, and this sort of thing. And I've read almost everything written that was published, that has been published by academics or popular authors on this question. And it is just a par for the course that these authors say that most of America's founders were deists. They wrote a godless constitution. They built a wall of separation between church and state. And so, yeah, I think these ideas are pretty much everywhere. Now, in some conservative Christian communities, you have folks that have read popular Christian authors that have said, wait a minute, this is not the case. And these popular Christian authors are largely right, I think. And yet they don't have much of a reading outside of conservative Christian communities. And so what I'm trying to do is bring these sorts of arguments to the general reading public. I know a lot of my audience will be conservative Christians, But I'm hopeful that the book is written in such a way that non-Christians or people who feel they're on the political left could read it and come away convinced by my arguments.
Well, I have some atheists in my audience, and I'm glad they're there, but all of them would say, yes, the Founding Fathers gave us a godless constitution. How do you respond to that, Mark David Hall?
Well, I think what we need to do is define what do we mean by a godless constitution. Now, at one level, you could say, well, the deity isn't really referenced in the Constitution, and this is largely correct, not until you get to the dateline in the year of our Lord, 1787, but I wouldn't want to place too much weight on that. But what I argue, and I spend time in the beginning of the book defining my terms, by Christian founding, I suggest that what's relevant is not whether or not most Americans in the era would have identified themselves as Christians. Clearly they did, 98% Protestant, 2% Roman Catholic, and about 2,000 Jews in a handful of American cities. But I want to talk about influence. And my argument is that America's founders were influenced in very important ways by Christian ideas or ideas developed within the Christian tradition of political reflection. And so I would want to push your atheist friends on this. Well, where did the founders draw their key ideas from? Now, an obvious answer that they would probably give based on a number of books they might have read is, well, the secular Enlightenment. And here I would say, wait a minute. No, many Enlightenment thinkers at this time were coming to the conclusion that there should be a strong central government run by the experts. America's Constitution went in almost the opposite direction, right? A government characterized by the rule of law, separation of powers, checks and balances, widespread participation. Why is this? I would suggest it's because that America's founders were convinced to a person that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, that even redeemed Christians continue to struggle with the old man within. And so they developed this constitutional order that was very skeptical, very worried of concentrated power. Again, many Enlightenment thinkers going in exactly the opposite direction because they have exactly the opposite anthropology. They think that people are basically good, that with the right education, they could be perfected. America's founders would have nothing to do with that nonsense.
Now, not all of our founding fathers were what we would call today born-again evangelical Christians. That's clear. A couple of them were deists. We know that Ben Franklin was. But is it true that all of our founding fathers, regardless of whether they were Bible-believing Christians or not, every single one of them believed in a creative God that was over all the affairs of man, and all of our rights and privileges were derived from that creator? Is that correct?
I would say absolutely that's correct. One of my favorite chapters is the first substantive one in the book, Were Any of America's Founders Deists? Deism, of course, refers to a theological tradition that came out of the Enlightenment that basically says we're going to toss out everything that doesn't seem rational to us. So maybe there's a creator God, but certainly the incarnation or the virgin birth or the atonement are miracles. These things are not rational, so we'll throw them out. So that's what we usually mean by deism. Now, I begin this chapter by quoting about 24 scholars or popular authors that say quite literally most of America's founders were deists. And by diving into the evidence, by the time we're done, I've hopefully convinced the reader that, yeah, we clearly have a handful, that are not Orthodox Christians. So a Jefferson, a Franklin, a John Adams are definitely not Orthodox Christians. But that's not the same thing as being a deist, because even these three referred repeatedly to God intervening in the affairs of men and nations. But when we turn to the broader population of founders, I mean important people who are at the federal convention, at the state ratification conventions, in the state legislature, in the first federal Congress, evidence of heterodoxy almost completely disappears, as does evidence of deism. Now, I don't make the opposite argument. I do not argue that most of America's founders were clearly Orthodox Christians. But the reason I don't do that is we simply lack the evidence in many people's right. cases. We don't have letters or diaries or that sort of thing. But when we do have that sort of evidence, far more often than not, it turns out that from everything we can tell, that most of America's founders were, in fact, Orthodox Christians, and they certainly weren't deists of any stripe.
And the one founding father that is thrown up more often than anyone else is Benjamin Franklin, that, you know, his deist background and so forth. But did not Benjamin Franklin encourage prayer when the framers could not reach agreement on certain parts of the Constitution? Wasn't it Ben Franklin that actually called the Constitutional Convention to prayer?
He did. And if I could just say by way of a backstory, we all know from our personal experience that people's religious views change over life. I'm sure we've all seen this. Maybe not everyone, but almost everyone has had some sort of change. As a young man, Franklin was clearly a deist. But in his autobiography, he actually writes that I recognized almost right away that this was a dangerous doctrine. Hmm. And he seems to have backed away from it. And so in the Federal Constitutional Convention, the way he introduces prayer is interesting. He says, the longer I live, the more I see that God controls the affairs of men and nations.
Yeah.
A sparrow does not fall without his knowledge. And therefore, he went on to encourage prayer in the Federal Convention. Franklin was the oldest member of the Federal Convention. And so it seems to me he's clearly saying, as I've grown older, I've come to understand that God intervenes in the affairs of men and nations. And he gives a number of very specific examples of where this is the case. Now, some people said, he was not serious. Well, it's telling that Roger Sherman, the indisputably pious Puritan from Connecticut, immediately seconded this motion for prayer. So Sherman certainly thought he was serious.
Yeah.
Now, the convention did not do it because what Franklin was suggesting is that a minister would be brought in from the outside, and some of the delegates worried that this would make it look as if there was a real problem in the Federal Convention. So they ended up not doing this. But I don't think that's because they didn't believe in prayer. And in fact, there's records throughout the summer of 1787 of Congress worshiping together and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think virtually all the delegates, it's fair to say, believed in the power of prayer. And I think even Franklin, by the end of his life, may very well have as well.
All right, we need to take a break. We are talking with Mark David Hall. Excellent new book, Did America Have a Christian Founding? Check it out. Did America Have a Christian Founding? I think you'll benefit greatly by it, and it would be a great Christmas present as well. We'll be back with Mark David Hall right after this quick break.
Today's news, God's Word, and your thoughts. This is Bob Burney Live.
And welcome back to Bob Burney Live. My guest, Mark David Hall, author of a wonderful new book, Did America Have a Christian Founding? And Mark, before we go any further, what is the best way for our listeners to find out more about your book?
So my wife built an author's webpage for me. It's markdavidhall.org. It has information about the book, people who've endorsed it, and also information about my other books. If people are curious about the sort of background I have that has prepared me to write this book, they could look at these, maybe want to buy a few of them. But again, most of those are academic books, whereas this one's aimed for the general reading public.
markdavidhall.org, correct?
Correct.
MarkDavidHall.org. All right, let's deal with the obvious question. The wall of separation of church and state. Mark, we of course know that that's in the Constitution. All right, we know that it isn't. Walk us through quickly, where in the world did this wall of separation of church and state come from, and what did Thomas Jefferson mean?
Sure. Far too many people believe that phrase is in the Constitution. Jefferson, of course, wrote it in a letter to the Danbury Baptist in 1802. And he did clearly say in his mind, in his estimation, that the Establishment Clause builds a wall of separation between church and state. Let me hasten to say that Jefferson actually played no role in drafting the First Amendment, no role in ratifying the First Amendment. So I'm not sure why we'd go to him in any case. But I have a wonderful story that goes right along with that. Literally 2 days after Jefferson penned the final draft of this letter to the Danbury Baptist, he went to church services in the U.S. Capitol building. And who did he preach then? None other than John Leland, the great Baptist itinerant minister and himself an opponent of religious establishments. Jefferson also allowed the Treasury Department building and the War Department building to be used for church services as well. And I say that all not to at all suggest that Jefferson wanted a close union between church and state. I think he wanted a greater degree of separation than did most other founders. But I want to suggest that even Jefferson, in his own practices, did not act as if there was a literal wall of separation between church and state. Now, if we push as to what that means with respect to Jefferson, I think he did want a greater degree of separation, and I think he probably saw this wall as primarily protecting the church. When you look to the founding generation more broadly, I think it's indisputably the case that the Establishment Clause, that first provision of the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, it means exactly what it says, that we aren't going to have a national church, and now by extension through the 14th Amendment, we won't have state churches either. But that's basically the only thing that's prohibited. There are all sorts of other ways in which the government can promote or encourage religion, presidential calls for prayer or Thanksgiving Day proclamations or having church services in the Capitol building, and on we could go, a whole variety of things that are constitutionally permissible. Now, we can argue about whether some of these things are prudential or not, but I think this idea, this myth, by which I mean a false story, that there's a wall of separation between church and state is just completely ahistorical.
Well, and it's been totally, totally misconstrued, misrepresented. And Jefferson certainly didn't mean prohibiting a nativity scene on the city square of some village in Nebraska, correct?
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason to believe that to be the case. In fact, when Jefferson was on a committee in the Continental Congress designed a national seal, he proposed a seal that would have Moses raising his hands over the Red Sea and the Egyptians chasing the Hebrews and being overwhelmed by the sea. And Jefferson's motto for the nation, this would be the national motto, is rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God. And so if Jefferson had no problem with that image as their national seal and their national motto, then certainly there's all the more reason to believe that he would not object to a town having a nativity scene or a state capitol having a monument of the Ten Commandments on its state house grounds or this sort of thing.
All right, I knew our time would go fast. The book is Did America Have a Christian Founding? The author is Mark David Hall. You can find out more information at markdavidhall.org. You can order it at Amazon. You can order it from your local bookstore. It would make a great gift. Mark, we've got about 1 minute left. What is the take-home? When someone puts your book down after finishing it, what is it that you want them to take home?
There's a couple of different major takeaways. One is that there is no wall of separation between church and state. Another very important one is that the founders embraced a very robust understanding of religious liberty that protects all Americans, Protestants, Catholics, Jews, and even people who are members of non-Christian faiths. And I think that's under assault. It's under assault in a big way. I also encourage my fellow Christians, I think as busy as we are raising families and working jobs and helping feed the poor and this sort of thing, that we just have to be involved in politics. I think it's our civic duty, our civic responsibility, and that we must make time to inform ourselves and to cast intelligent ballots. And then a final thing I encourage my fellow citizens to do is to support some of these wonderful Christian legal advocacy groups. The Alliance Defending Freedom, First Liberty. I know a lot of us don't have extra money to go to that sort of thing, but those of us who do, I think those are very worthy causes, and they're worthy of our support.
All right, Mark David Hall, the book is Did America Have a Christian Founding? The website, markdavidhall.org. Mark, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for this wonderful book. God bless you.
Thank you very much, Bob.
All right, we'll be back with more Bob Burney Live right after this break. Stay tuned.